asked me to comment on the significance or the impact of aesthetics on my particular subfield of study, which is international relations. And, you know, what is the significance of this line of inquiry for international relations? And I think it's quite significant because the study of aesthetics, broadly construed, provides an intervening space or moment between what is the subjective and what is the material, particularly in international relations. And there's this huge debate about that. Because even though, as we have heard from Simonetta's presentation, aesthetics can be used for state propaganda purposes, for oppressive purposes, aesthetics can also be an opportunity for emancipation. And I would suggest that aesthetics always provide this opportunity for emancipation precisely because it is based on a kind of performance. And performance can always be re-performed. Performance is always mobile, it's fluid, it's formed, and yet formless. And in this space of active participation and reconstruction, we see that the polarities of life can be reconciled. And many polarities have been discussed in today's workshop, the polarity between the national and the transnational, elite, mass, technology, art, male, female, the ordinary and the extraordinary, and of course, East and West. I would like to suggest that the internationalization of aesthetics may lead us to more globalized thinking rather than being stuck in what many papers have critiqued, which is a being gripped by the Western canon, as one abstract put it. I think it was yours, your abstract. Because there are different traditions of aesthetics, as Christine has indicated. And if we look at older traditions of aesthetics, particularly, for example, in ancient philosophies like Taoism, which could not proceed without an understanding of aesthetics, we see that this aesthetic turn opens an opportunity for engagement with these older traditions and philosophies. And I would propose that this has been going on all this time already, and that peoples from outside of the West have been dealing with these reconciliations and reformulations for a long time. And this is when I would like to bring up the movie that I saw on the plane coming over, because I thought, my God, this is a perfect representation of what we're talking about here. The movie is a Japanese film, and I learned that it is now the number one Japanese film being played in Japan today. It's called Therme Rome, and Therme is the Latin word for bath, so it's Roman bath. That's the translation. And the premise of the movie could be put down as kooky, but that's precisely the point, that the thing about aesthetics, which we often forget about, is that it is ultimately based on a sense of humor and satire, because that is where the subversiveness lies. When you treat hegemony and power and all of those other kinds of things with humor and satire, you are able to destabilize it without incurring too much violence onto oneself. The premise of the movie is that this ancient Roman architect, who is a designer of baths in Rome, he's disappointed with the way, you know, the bath system in Rome has degenerated. And he recalls, you know, how the bath system in Rome used to be such a glorious place. And then one day he's sitting in the bath and he sinks down in the water to think about things, and he gets sucked into this tunnel. And then suddenly he pops out and he's in contemporary Japan, in a bathhouse in Japan. And he discovers, oh my God, they use baskets for their clothes, and they use these tubs, and they use these, you know, showers for the, that could be, you could use an intestine for that kind of thing. And so then suddenly he gets sucked back into ancient Rome, and then he implements all of these ideas he learned from contemporary Japan. Everybody hails him as a great architect, and he feels kind of guilty that he's not really that original. He, after all, he borrowed it from these, he calls them the flat-faced slaves. And but then he occasionally gets sucked back into it, and he pops up again in contemporary Japan, and he learns another thing. Meanwhile, there's this love story going on with this young woman who is a frustrated manga artist, and he always pops up whenever she's around, and she's not represented in the stereotypical way of either, you know, serene or sorrowful Japanese beauty or cookie schoolgirl type. She's like a mix of the two. And she's a contemporary woman. She's a contemporary young woman who's a frustrated manga artist who goes home because she can't make it as a manga artist. And her parents, by the way, run an inn that has all these hot springs. And so her family comes from this tradition of baths and things like that. So anyway, the ancient Roman architect pops up occasionally. And so what you see is this reversal of learning going on, where instead of Asia learning from the West, which Japan has a very laden history of doing, you have the West, and especially ancient Rome, the greatest, most powerful empire on earth, as the narrator tells us in the beginning. Ancient Rome learning from contemporary Japan. Huge empire, little country. And then, at one point, she falls into a pool with him, and she gets sucked with him back to ancient Rome. But the passage is always depicted, you know, with water swirling around him. And this time, because they fall together, they're holding on to each other like this. And at this moment, that famous aria from Madame Butterfly is playing. So it's another reversal. But it's another reversal in that they are swirling in this water together. They're holding to each other together. And by the way, the actor is very handsome. And you see his beautiful face in slow motion. And the aria from Madame Butterfly is playing. And so they get sucked into ancient Rome. She's there. Meanwhile, her parents are worried about her. And her father, who has this gang of old friends who are always in the bathhouse, they somehow get sucked in. Then they go to ancient Rome. And then they start to build all of these bathhouses and hot huts to help the soldiers, the Roman soldiers, heal from their wounds. And so they are benefiting from the local people. And then, they return back to their own time. And
spoil the ending.
What? Don't spoil the ending. No. So, but the whole film is about a very fresh, out of the box, rethinking about these East-West relations, national, transnational, the ordinary, the extraordinary, male-female technology and art. It's a complete re-examination of this relationship from a very Japanese perspective. One of the things is that even though there is this very touching love story, the man and the woman never kiss. There is no carnal expression between them, even though you know that there is a deep emotional connection between them. And that is a very Asian kind of filmic representation of a relationship. So what I would like to suggest from this ridiculous movie, which I thoroughly enjoyed, is that there is new thinking going on in categories that are beyond our understanding in the Western Academy at this point. And even, I would suggest, in the Japanese Academy, because academies in the world are so taken by the Western canon. It is in these areas of cultural production that we see fresh thinking, new thinking, and reformulations of the old that are arising that give us, actually, hope and optimism for the future. Thank you.
Thank you.